rise up. Must come down, but don't let me fall.
Two 2:30 to 4 Monday to Friday. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. Mitch Whitmire here with you. We venture off to the phone lines. He hops on every Friday with us. We're always thankful for his time. He is John Fokey, executive producer and studio host for the Minnesota Timberwolves. You guessed it. We're talking Timberwolves with him today. John, as always, thank you for the time. The Wolves are they're rolling a little bit, winners of three straight. And one thing that I've been absolutely loving and adoring about this team so far is last year, their first three losses were by 4 points, 3 points, and 3 points. This year, their first four wins, John, have been by 3 points, 2, 3, and 3 points. They've been flipping the script from last year so far, haven't they?
Yeah, they really have. And really, over the last couple of years, they've struggled to close out close games. And now suddenly, you're looking at a team that, you know, is second best in the league in clutch time play. So, I think a couple of things factor into that. Number one, when you bring in veterans and guys that have been through just about every situation you could imagine, and Jimmy Butler, Taj Gibson, Jamal Crawford, and Jeff Teague, you know, they've been in these situations before, whether regular season, playoff games, you know, on down the line. They've played in big games, in tight games, and they've just got a sense of calm about them that, you know, the young Wolves of the past didn't have, because they didn't have that same experience. And then the growth over the last couple of years of Andrew Wiggins and Karl-Anthony Towns, and you think back to last year and really the last two seasons, you could say, and when Minnesota found themselves in clutch time, the ball was in the hands of Andrew Wiggins. The ball was in the hands of Karl-Anthony Towns. And those guys, you know, were forced to make something happen and really learned, you know, by going through the fire and going through that trial and error. So they've gained experience. You've added experience. And really, Mitch, the thing that stands out to me is just how calm everybody seems to be. I think back to last year, and how many times on the postgame did we hear Tibbs say, you know, guys started pressing late in the game, or, you know, a team would go on a run and suddenly Minnesota would try to, you know, get it all back in one play, or one guy would try to carry the load when really you need to spread things out. And you know, you look at this group right now, there's patience out there, there's poise out there. It's not just get the ball in Jimmy's hand and let some, you know, make something happen. It's, all right, Jimmy, you might start the play, but the ball might end up in the hands of Teague or Wiggins or Cat or whoever. And so there's just, you know, there's more options, and so guys are able to make more plays and keep the defense more honest because you've got more weapons out there.
Let's go back earlier in the week when the Wolves took out the Heat in Miami by 3 points, edged him out in overtime. Cat was efficient. I think he was 7 of 11 from the field, had another double-double, something like 20 and 12. Jimmy Butler was a pest defensively for the Heat. But how about the play of Jeff Teague? Down the stretch, he hit a couple of big boy shots, had a three in overtime, a couple of free throws to put the game on ice. I know he had another jumper from about 10 feet. He did not shy away from taking the shots in big moments. And I know last week or 2 weeks ago, when I was ravishing at all these late game options that the Wolves have, I didn't even bring up Jeff Teague. Yet here he is in Miami hitting a couple of big shots for the Wolves.
Yeah, not only that, but he was a pest defensively. He had 6 steals that tied a career high for him, 23 points and 11 assists. And that's, you know, what you saw Monday against Miami is why Coach Tibbs brought him in, because he can be a threat offensively in those types of situations. And, you know, I know everybody loved Ricky Rubio, and certainly, you know, I did too. I really liked what Ricky brought to the team on the floor, off the floor, everything. But when you talk about, you know, being a threat offensively in those situations, Ricky really wasn't. He was developing into that. You know, we saw it for stretches there at the end of last season, but he's just not the same kind of threat that Jeff Teague is in those moments. And, you know, Rubio is much more of a threat offensively when the game's in transition, whereas Teague can be that threat in the half court. And that's what we saw, hitting that top of the key three that really helped kind of seal the game as it put Minnesota up by 7, and they went on to win, you know, by 3. So I think that's, you saw exactly why Coach Tibbs targeted Teague and went out and got him in the offseason.
Really wanted to get your thoughts on this one, John, because on the flip side for Miami, on Monday night, Deion Waiters had 33 points on 14 of 28 shooting. I'm just wondering, like, any idea what happened with him when he got to Miami? Because he had a couple solid years in Cleveland. He was all right in OKC. Maybe it's because he's more featured with the Heat in that lineup, but he has really figured things out, hasn't he?
Yeah, he really has, and that's one of the things. I mean, give Eric Spoelstra and Pat Riley a ton of credit for what they've done to Dion Waiters. They've got him committed, you know, to getting in shape, to staying in shape. They're playing a style of basketball that seems to suit his play. They're featuring him, and he's become a big part of their success, and they're leaning on him. If you think about, you know, in Cleveland, he was second banana to Kyrie, and I think LeBron. I can't remember exactly the years that he was in Cleveland, but I think he was with LeBron there towards the end of LeBron's first go-round. And then in OKC, he was, you know, again, second banana. And now down in Miami, he's not the first option, but he is a big part of what they do. And coming off the bench, he's that guy that they look to light things up. And he just seems to have great chemistry with those guys and a great rapport with Eric Spoelstra and that coaching staff. And so, you know, Dion's a guy that early in his career was just, you know, you could label him a volume chucker. And now you look at him, and he's still, I mean, 28 shots. he's not shying away from putting the ball up, but he's been more efficient over the last year and a half, you know, since he got down there to Miami, gotten himself in good shape. He seems committed, and he's been a big part of that Heat turnaround. Certainly, he was a massive part of it last year after their 11-30 start when they finished 30-11. And you think back to, he actually suffered an injury against Minnesota late in the season. And I think if he would have stayed healthy, they may have been able to pick up a couple more wins down the stretch and snuck into the playoffs there in the East.
Always enjoy his time with us. He is John Foakey, executive producer and studio host for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Wednesday night, the Wolves were in New Orleans. They edged out the Pelicans by 6 points. 22 turnovers for Minnesota. Karl-Anthony Towns in foul trouble early on. Gorgui Dieng saw some extended minutes, played pretty dang well. Cat finished the game with just 2 points, and they won the game. And so I'm thinking, John, a game like that for Minnesota does not exist last year, where Towns struggles mightily, gets in foul trouble, and the Wolves are sloppy, yet they win. And I'm kind of at a point where it's like, I don't care how they get them as long as they get them. Are you of the same mind? I don't think we should be griping about the style in which the Wolves are winning games.
No, I mean, a win's a win, and especially early in the season, while you're still trying to figure things out, to be figuring them out while picking up wins, especially close wins, is huge for this team. And, you know, the more, I'm working on a feature here for our pregame show tomorrow on Minnesota's clutch time play, and the one thing that I keep coming back to is the more this team wins in close games, the more confidence they have in those situations, and the more you get that swagger, and, you know, you can kind of turn it into a snowball effect. Whereas you can look back to in the past when they haven't had that success, and especially last season, I mean, how many 10-point leads in the third quarter did Minnesota blow and then find themselves in a close game and they wouldn't go their way, and all of a sudden you kind of get into that mindset of, here we go again. You know, you almost didn't want to go up by 10 in the second half because you felt like the game was going to end up a close one and you were going to fall in it. And so, you know, now you kind of get that snowball effect the opposite way, where things are rolling, guys are feeling good, they're feeling confident. Andrew Wiggins has the second most points in clutch time in the NBA this season. He was tied with Damian Lillard going into last night, and then Lillard just lit up the L.A. Lakers in clutch time. So he's second, and Jimmy Butler is fourth in clutch time scoring. So you've got two guys in the top five in scoring in clutch time. And the other thing, you know, in terms of clutch time numbers for Minnesota, they're rebounding well in clutch time. And they're not, you know, if you think about how to slow teams down, and teams have been lighting Minnesota up in fast break points and transition points so far this season. But in those final 5 minutes, the Wolves do a great job rebounding the basketball. So they get a stop and they finish the possession with the rebound, or, you know, they finish the offensive possession with the score. So you're not allowing teams to get out and run on you, and you're able to set your defense when you do those things, which has been huge for Minnesota. And so, you know, whether Towns has a big game, whether, you know, he battles foul trouble and scores only 2 points, this team is able to find ways to win because of the weapons that they have and the fact that, you know, in clutch time, they make the right play and they play with confidence.
Yeah, and the reason I don't even really bat an eye at it with Karl-Anthony Towns, as you mentioned, in foul trouble with the 2 points, is like, we know, John, that this isn't a sign of things to come or a trend that's starting with Cat. It was just an off night that was brought down with foul trouble, but I'm thinking, like, if they can win a game with Towns scoring one bucket like that, that's a scary sign for the rest of the league, is it not?
Yeah, and, you know, that one bucket that he got was a big basket. It was a putback dunk. late in the fourth quarter that put Minnesota up by six. And that's been the biggest difference, too, when you talk about clutch time play by this team, is they've been playing ahead. So they've had the lead going into the final 5 minutes. You know, it might be a tenuous lead at times, but they've been able to play out in front. And so when a team makes a run and ties it up, they can answer rather than them having to, you know, battle back from down whatever to make it a game in clutch time. And I think playing with the lead has had a big impact on the success of this team so far in those close games.
John Folkey, executive producer, studio host for the Minnesota Timberwolves, kind enough to take time out of his afternoon to hop on. It is the Blitz here on AM 1450 KATE. What's your feel on the Pelicans after seeing them now once against the Timberwolves? They've got their big two with Boogie Cousins and Anthony Davis. Drew Holiday's a good guard. They'll get Rondo back, they think, in a couple of weeks. But there isn't much else there, at least it would appear. So where do you see New Orleans trending throughout the year? Could they be a playoff team somewhere, maybe slotted in, battling for that eighth spot?
Maybe battling for the eighth spot. But, you know, going into that game on Wednesday, 76% of their points came from their starting five. And coming out of that game, you know, Minnesota's bench played well. But they had a huge scoring advantage, I think 45-17 in bench points. But you would expect that because of, you know, there's just a lack of depth. Number one, New Orleans is dealing with a ton of injuries. And number two, they just don't have a lot of weapons outside of those two guys that you mentioned, Boogie and Anthony Davis. And so I think teams are going to look at that New Orleans squad and say, all right, here's the formula for beating them. If Cousins and Davis go off, that's fine, but don't allow Drew Holiday to have a big night. Don't allow Etuan Moore to get up, you know, 15, 17 points. If you keep those other guys quiet and Davis and Cousins, you know, do what they do, combine for 57 points in a ball game, that's fine. You're still probably going to win that game. And I think that's how Minnesota won that game. I mean, Cousins and Davis both had big nights, but they didn't allow anybody else to go off. And so if you're Alvin Gentry and you're looking at your roster and, you know, he lit his team up after the Orlando loss over the weekend. I can't imagine he was too thrilled after the Minnesota loss, but they've got to find a way to get other guys involved and you know, put them in positions to help carry some of the load, whether it's Holiday, whether it's, you know, Dante Cunningham or whoever they decide to get out there on the floor. They've got to find more points outside of Davis and Cousins.
Looking ahead for Minnesota, two games at home at Target Center this weekend. Dallas and Charlotte will be in town. Looks like a great chance, a great opportunity for the Wolves to build on here and be 7-3 heading to the Bay Area next week. How good are you feeling about the Wolves' chances to take both of these games?
Well, you know, about a week or so ago, I was feeling really great coming off that game winner in OKC and looking ahead to Indiana and Detroit, and that didn't go so well for Minnesota. Back-to-back 20-point losses in those games, albeit without Jimmy Butler. So I think, you know, you look at Dallas, and Minnesota will be catching them on the second end of a back-to-back, and Dallas has really struggled this year. I mean, you know, they're hanging on to the Dirk Nowitzki, J.J. Barea era. Devin Harris is still on their team. Rick Carlisle is a tremendous coach, but they're sort of in a rebuild, kind of on-the-fly sort of mode and trying to figure things out. So, you know, to catch Dallas on the second end of a back-to-back, they got blown out on Wednesday by the L.A. Clippers. It's a great opportunity for Minnesota, but you can't, you know, you can't start thinking that just because you've won three in a row that it's, you know, you're going to see Dirk just lay down out there on the floor of Target Center and allow you to run all over him. So, you know, hopefully some lessons were learned from those back-to-back losses to the Pacers and the Pistons, and Minnesota will come in focused, and it would be really great, Mitch, to see this team build a big lead and not find themselves in a close game. I think it would do wonders for their confidence. You know, already I think their confidence is at a high level, but to come out and just take it right to a team that on paper, you know, they should go out and beat and build a big lead and you know, not have to find themselves battling at the end to close that game out. And, you know, Charlotte's an interesting team. They add Dwight Howard in the offseason. You know, they've still got Kemba Walker. Steve Clifford, again, a very, very good coach who finds ways to win ball games. But, you know, for Minnesota, when you've got a back-to-back and both games are at home, you've got to take advantage of it. You know, normally we see back-to-backs where the home game on Friday, you travel and play again on Saturday or vice versa. But if you're going to find yourself in a back-to-back situation and both games are at home, you've got to be able to go out and take care of business on your home court. So hopefully Minnesota can do that, stay focused. You know, going for their first four-game winning streak since 2012. Can you imagine that? It's been a while. And you know, pick up that fourth straight win and you know, get some momentum here at home before they head out to Golden State, Phoenix, and Utah next week.
We'll finish up. Wanted to pick your brain. You dove in, really good insight on the Dallas Mavericks side of things. And I know so far this year, I've watched them play twice. Harrison Barnes has led the way for Dallas, averaging around 16 points per game, but he's shooting under 40% from the field, around 31% from three. So not where you want those numbers to be. And I was going to ask you, and you brought up the word rebuild, or kind of a running rebuild for Dallas. Is that where they are kind of going or trending? I'm wondering like what their blueprint is, because I can't imagine Mark Cuban's the kind of owner that just wants to have a complete overhaul. They have guys like Harrison Barnes. They went out and they drafted Dennis Smith. But on paper, like you said, there's just not a lot there right now, and there are a lot of aging players still on that roster.
Yeah, it's tough to say what their plan is, not being around that organization, you know, as much as we are around the Minnesota Timberwolves. But you've got some nice young pieces, as you mentioned, in Barnes and Smith Jr. And are those guys, you know, your future? It's tough to say. Since Harrison came over from Golden State, they put the ball in his hands a lot. His scoring numbers are up, but his efficiency numbers, just in terms of his field goal percentage, three-point percentage, is down compared to his time at Golden State, where he was one of many options. And now they're trying to make him sort of the featured option these last two seasons with the Dallas Mavericks. So I think those are two nice pieces moving forward. I think you know, Brian Seaman, who does play-by-play for the LA Clippers, I was listening to him on my way home on Wednesday night, and I thought he brought up a great point. He said, Rick Carlisle, you know, is one of the best coaches in the NBA, and you have to imagine, if you're Mark Cuban, that as long as Carlisle wants to coach, you're going to keep him employed. So you don't imagine there's going to be a huge blow-up and overhaul top to bottom for the Dallas Mavericks. And the same goes for Dirk Nowitzki and J.J. Barea. You know, those guys brought the championship to Dallas back in 2012 or 2011. And, you know, they've been cornerstones for that franchise for so long that I just can't imagine Cuban going in and saying, hey, Dirk, we need you to, you know, to hang it up, when really, you know, Dirk's been taking a pay cut over the last couple of years to allow Cuban to go out and try and find guys to fill out the roster. And a great Dirk Nowitzki story here, Mitch, and not to get too far off topic, but I was just reminded of it there, saying that, you know, Dirk has taken a pay cut. There was a story maybe 2-3 weeks ago that he got some fan mail sent to him down there in Dallas, and when he opened it up, it was a note from a fan saying, Dirk, we appreciate everything you've done over the years, all the times, you know, you could have taken more money, but you didn't because you wanted to help grow this team and franchise. And inside was a $20 bill, and it said, have lunch on me. So, you know, Dirk, I think Dirk is just one of the greatest guys, you know, in the league, not only as a player, but just his personality off the court and everything that he has meant to this game, you know, being one of the original stretch fours, and was very happy to see him win a championship there in Dallas. And so, you know, I look at Dallas, and you want to keep a guy like that around as long as he wants to play. And, you know, Dirk can get cooking at any time. So, well, you've got some nice pieces. That's still Dirk's team. It's still, you know, Dirk, Rick Carlisle, those guys. It's still their team. And, you know, whatever the plans are for the future for Dallas, you got to imagine that they're going to involve those guys in, you know, a transition period rather than just saying, boom, you're done. We need to move on. I just don't see that happening.
Dirk in Dallas in town Saturday, tip time at 7. Charlotte in town Sunday, tip time 7 p.m. there as well. John, as always, thank you for the time.
Yep, take care, Mitch.
Brandon Warren of The Athletic talks Twins, Dodgers, Astros next.